just 5 a day.
Chicago was among the worst, with black women about 60% more likely to die than white women. Memphis had the largest disparity in the study, and 3 other cities fared worse than Chicago. Research by the Metropolitan Chicago Breast Cancer Task Force suggests societal issues are chiefly to blame, especially uneven access to screening. Some public health experts note that genetics may also play a significant role.
That report from Gabriel Spitzer in Chicago. And that ends our noon hour look at WILL News. Our next report this afternoon at 4:30 during All Things Considered.
Support for WILL comes from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods on the corner of 6th and University in Champaign, providing Champaign-Urbana with an international selection of chocolates, cheeses, oils, balsamic vinegar, jams, spices, barbecue sauces, and more. World Harvest invites you to join them in supporting public radio.
It's 12:38. Let's take a look at the weather. We're going to see a change in the weather. A change in the weather pattern will bring somewhat cooler and wetter conditions to the Midwest for the end of the week. A large upper-level low-pressure system in the southern plains will slowly track northeast towards the Ohio Valley by Saturday. As the system approaches, it will spread scattered showers and thunderstorms east of the Mississippi River today. The slow movement of the system will cause rain chances to linger into tomorrow and Saturday. Increased cloud cover will keep temperatures several degrees cooler than what we've seen in recent days, but temperatures will remain above average. Highs today will range from the low 60s in northwestern Iowa to the mid-80s in Indiana. Low temperatures tonight will range from the mid-40s in central Iowa to the low 60s across northeastern Indiana. The forecast for east central Illinois this afternoon, mostly cloudy. Showers are likely with isolated thunderstorms. The high 75, the wind from the south at 10 to 15 miles per hour with higher gusts. Tonight, showers with isolated thunderstorms are likely this evening. After midnight, there's a chance of showers and isolated thunderstorms. We'll see a low in the mid-50s tonight. The wind out of the south from 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, there's a chance of morning showers and isolated thunderstorms. Showers with a chance of thunderstorms are likely tomorrow afternoon. Look for a high of 68. The wind will be light and from the south. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and a low of 52. The wind light and from the southwest. Saturday, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers. The high 65. The wind will be light and out of the northwest. And the outlook Saturday night through Monday, partly cloudy with lows around 50, highs around 70. At noon central time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana ranged from the upper 50s to 80 degrees. In Illinois, there was a mix of sun and cloud, with some locations reporting light rain. In Indiana, all the locations reported sunshine. At Rockford, 77 degrees. At O'Hare, it was 80. At Bloomington, 68. In Mattoon, 70. Carbondale reported light rain and 58 degrees. At South Bend, 79 degrees. Also 79 at Terre Haute. In Indianapolis, 78. In Lafayette, 80. At Willard Airport, at the top of the hour, a cloudy sky, 73 degrees. The dew point, 57, the relative humidity, 57%, the wind out of the south at 16, the barometer 30.10 and steady, and at 1241, 73 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. Ward Churchill gained notoriety for statements about the 9/11 attacks. The former professor, activist, and author angered many when he wrote the attacks were unavoidable because of U.S. foreign policy. He referred to it as, quoting here, chickens coming home to roost. Churchill remains as controversial as ever, but he made a bit of a homecoming last night when he returned to the University of Illinois Springfield campus to give a lecture on activism. Rachel Otwell has this report.
Ward Churchill graduated from the former Sangamon State University, now known as UIS, back in the mid-70s. Churchill taught at the University of Colorado before he was fired for academic misconduct. However, his supporters believe it was fallout from the 9/11 backlash, and he's still fighting that dismissal. These days, though, Churchill is more of a full-time political activist. But he's not your typical hippie or lefty either. For instance, if it were up to Churchill, who was born in Urbana, carrying guns in Illinois would have been legalized long ago.
Got concealed carry permit in my pocket. Okay. That's just, to me, a no-brainer. All my right-wing critics are often amazed.
Still, he's definitely not winning many, if any, of those critics over on that point alone. And it's not the only contradiction when it comes to Churchill. From his military resume to claims of Native American ancestry, a lot about Ward Churchill is open to interpretation. But one thing is for certain, Churchill's motivated for activism. He says that comes from a consciousness he arrived at in the late 60s.
Being conscripted into the U.S. military, ending up in Vietnam on the wrong side of a colonial war.
Activism in America has come a long way since the days of Vietnam pushback and protests from college students. Churchill says the video recorders, which members of today's Occupy movement are more likely to carry than guns, are important. But he says for an activist not to arm his or herself is a concession of power.
Well, we could have used a few more recorders and some of these technological assets that you have available. Would have been really nice to be able to record instantaneously, record and transmit things police were doing in those days. But availing ourselves of those technologies, had they been available at the time, would not have supplanted the need for the capacity to engage in armed self-defense.
The topics Churchill addressed while speaking to a crowd of about 40 people at the University of Illinois Springfield went far off topic from activism. He claimed that plagiarism and fraudulence in the media is expansive, and that all phones are equipped with GPS tracking and technology users should be wary. UIS's Radical Student Union organized the event. The group had help from the relatively new community organization based in Springfield, Foundation for a United Front, which invited Churchill to speak. Richard Gilman-Opalski is a professor at UIS and the faculty advisor for the Radical Student Union. He gives credit to the students for their ongoing activism and events, even if it causes controversy.
An organization of students that are committed to bringing controversial, marginalized, and yes, even dangerous ideas, giving dangerous ideas a forum to be discussed, yet not just approved, but even rejected, challenged and rejected. I do have to say I'm not personally proud, but very, very happy. These things were not happening on this campus when I arrived here in 2006.
Ward Churchill also spoke at length about the way universities have changed since his days at Sangamon State, including rising costs. The picture he painted for students was dire.
They're telling you, you have to do it, and society needs you to do it, the economy needs you to do it. Walk out with nothing but this piece of paper certifying your employability, and you're already indentured for the next 30 years with what amounts to a mortgage. But you don't have a house to show for it.
Churchill says universities these days are more about teaching students information to regurgitate versus critical thinking. I'm Rachel Otwell.
It's 12:45. Well, get ready. Tax time is fast approaching. The income tax is the major source of funding for the United States, but that was not always the case. The story of how the U.S. wound up with the income tax is the story of two wars, a Supreme Court justice on his deathbed, and a duck. David Kestenbaum of NPR's Planet Money team has a brief history.
Before you can have an income tax, you have to overcome three basic obstacles. The first, logistics, like how do you make sure people pay? In the early days, the government got most of its revenue a simpler way, taxing stuff that came into the ports, though that had its limits.
Tariff duties are a great way to raise money as long as you're not fighting a war.
Yeah, because someone's blocking your port, right?
Or sinking your ships on the way across the ocean.
That's Joseph Thorndike, who co-authored a book called War and Taxes. During the Civil War, he says, Congress decided it had to try an income tax. And the government does this really very clever thing to get people to pay it. It makes tax returns public.
During the Civil War, anyone could go in and look up your income tax return, or at least your report of how much you earned. And the idea was that this would help improve compliance, because your neighbor would see you driving around on your brand new plow, and he'd say, wait a minute, that guy, how did he get all that money? I'm going to see how much he reported on his income tax.
A tax assessor's list from 1864 shows a Mr. Abraham Lincoln, address White House, taxes paid $1,296. Also entries for restaurant owners and liquor dealers. The income tax, people paid it. The income tax faced a second obstacle, though, a legal obstacle. The income tax at this point taxed mainly the rich didn't like it, and the rich have lawyers. In 1895, the case reaches the U.S. Supreme Court.
My great-great-uncle was one of the lead lawyers in that case. And guess which side he was on?
Trying to shoot down the income tax.
You got it. He was a Morgan partner 5 years later.
This is economic historian John Steele Gordon. The argument his great-great-uncle made in court was that the income tax violated the U.S. Constitution, which said any direct tax had to be divvied up among the states according to their populations. And the income tax wasn't taxing according to population. It was taxing according to income.
A very interesting thing happened in the Supreme Court. One justice was ill. In fact, he was dying. Justice Jackson from Tennessee. It was argued before eight justices, and they split 4-4.
That's why we have an odd number of justices, so you can't have a tie.
Exactly.
The court decides to haul Justice Jackson out of his deathbed and rehear the case. Jackson is a supporter of the income tax, so he is going to break the tie in favor of the income tax. And the tie is broken, but it's 5-4 the other way, against. Income tax is ruled unconstitutional.
One of the other justices, we don't know who, because the opinion was unsigned, switched his vote. And so the tax was unconstitutional, no income tax.
The legal problem is finally overcome in 1913 with a constitutional amendment. So, logistics, check. Legality, check. The income tax needs one more thing, love. The income tax up to this point has been a tax on the rich. Everyone else was exempt. This changes with World War II. The government needs money. And now, ordinary folks are asked to pay.
There was a lot of concern that Americans just wouldn't do it.
Again, Joseph Thorndike.
That they wouldn't understand that they were supposed to, or that they had to, or even just how to do it.
The government needs to get the word out. It needs a spokesperson for the income tax. Someone with credibility. Someone who's instantly recognizable. Someone who's easy to understand. Donald Duck. This film is from 1943. In it, Donald Duck is marching around his house patriotically, listening to the radio and talking back to it.
Are you a patriotic American?
Yes, sir.
Eager to do your part?
Yes, sir.
Donald Duck runs and gets a gun and a sword and boxing gloves.
Then there's something important you can do.
Boy.
Your income tax.
Income tax?
Yes, your income tax.
Income tax.
The film walks Donald Duck through filling out his tax form. Occupation, he writes, actor. Dependents, three. Huey, Dewey, and Louie. And this wartime patriotic motivation campaign, it worked. Maybe we didn't love the income tax, but we paid it. And it's still around today. David Kestenbaum, NPR News.
There's a Yankee Doodle spirit in the heart of everyone.
Illinois public media stations celebrate 90 years of public service broadcasting. To kick off a year of memories and celebrations, NPR congressional correspondent Andrea Seabrook will visit the WILL studios. Join Andrea Seabrook and the WILL news team for a wine and cheese reception on Wednesday, April 11. Tickets are $25 a person. Reservations can be made by calling 217-333-7300.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 22nd of March, 2012. It's the birthday of Stephen Sondheim, New York City, 1930. His musicals include A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, A Little Night Music, Sweeney Todd, Into the Woods. Stephen Sondheim, who said, "I prefer neurotic people. I like to hear rumblings beneath the surface." It's the birthday of Billy Collins, New York City, 1941. An only child, wrote his first poem at the age of 7 while he was riding with his parents and looked out the window and saw a sailboat on the East River. He was an English professor and poet, wrote a couple of books before his breakthrough in 1988, The Apple That Astonished Paris. By 1999, the New York Times called him the most popular poet in America. Three of his four books were in the top 16 bestsellers on Amazon.com, competing with Walt Whitman, Robert Frost, Jewell, and Jim Morrison. Billy Collins, who said, "I don't think people read poetry because they're interested in the poet. I think they read poetry because they're interested in themselves." It's the birthday of the novelist who wrote, "I just pointed my rifle at him and let him have the big one, right through the third button on his shirt. If he ever figured to sew that particular button on again, he was going to have to scrape it off his backbone." And that's Louis L'Amour, born in Jamestown, North Dakota, 1908, author of many Western novels, including How the West Was Won. It's the birthday of the best-selling novelist in the world, James Patterson, born Newburgh, New York, 1947. He was an executive at the J. Walter Thompson Ad Agency, retired to devote himself to writing. He's published more than 70 novels, and according to recent data, he outsells Stephen King, Dan Brown, and John Grisham combined. James Patterson, who said, "If you think of the story that you